Hi, this is Craig Merriweather, host of the Mastermind Show. My guest today is Deirdre Fay. Deirdre is a psychotherapist. Her background as a trauma center clinician and supervisor, a past faculty member of Sensory Motor Psychotherapy Institute, and a former board member of the New England Society for the Study of Trauma and Dissociation, as well as learning to heal the trauma in her own life, lead Deirdre to create the Becoming Safely Embodied skills, which helps people with traumatic experiences gain control over their internal world by giving structured practices so they can free themselves from psychological distress. Well, Deirdre, I just want to welcome you to the show today.
Oh, thanks, Craig. Glad to be here.
The reason I wanted to have you on the show, because I'm excited not only to have an expert in healing trauma in people's lives, but I like people who have actually have life experience. And your knowledge from healing trauma comes not just from study and from book knowledge, so to speak, but from your own actual experience. And I was wondering if you could explain how you came to develop this Becoming Safely Embodied skills.
Sure. Well, at the time that all my trauma came up, I was living at Kripalu Center, which is a yoga and health center in the Berkshires of Massachusetts. I was one of the many residents that lived there, and I'd been living there maybe about, I don't know how many lives, years. I was there about 6.5 years total, and I'm not sure when exactly my trauma memories came up. But within that very safe and nurturing environment, I was in a workshop with a therapist in the area, and I was just doing the demo, not knowing what would happen. But all this memory started coming up, and it really pulled the rug out from under me. I had gone from being able to do yoga and meditation every day, sometimes for hours, exercising, swimming, bicycling, running, coming from all of that to all of a sudden, really like hiding in my bed, not wanting to get out. And that was such a radical difference for me. And I didn't have a context for it. I was lucky enough then to get into therapy and start putting some of the pieces together. One of the driving questions for me during that time was, how come I was able to sit and practice and explore my inner world before, and when these trauma memories came up, I no longer could. I was, you know, it's like my world just fell apart, and I couldn't make sense of it. And then I kept thinking, well, if the great texts of yoga and meditation say that this is exactly what we can do and how we can heal our inner world, I thought, well, how do I do it? How do I take those wonderful teachings and sort of download them into my life at that point? And then how do I help other people with it? Because there were certainly times when I was doing my own healing where I thought, the only reason it's worth doing this is so that I can help other people. And I think many trauma survivors feel that way somewhere along the way. It's just not worth it. It feels so hopeless and helpless at many times. And the only way that I could find my way out of it was to feel like, well, at least I'll go through this horrible situation and I'll be able to help other people so they don't have to go through it terribly.
Yeah. Just to kind of back up, before you moved to this center, you were actually kind of in the high-stakes world of advertising. And all.
Yes, that's right.
So you kind of made this big shift from, you know, and that's got to be, it looks like fun because you see it on the TV shows and stuff, but it's really high stress, and you got to wine and dine your clients, and there's big money involved. And you kind of put that aside, and you move to the center. And Kripalu is this beautiful place up in the mountains, and they hold lots of retreats with big name people do their retreats there, and there's also a community there, and it's lots of yoga and meditation. So before, in the advertising world, you had no remembrance of this trauma in your life, but then you moved to...
No, I didn't.
So you moved to the center, and what do you think brought it up? Was it the movement of the yoga, or just the you finally dropped the the stress and the anxiety and it kind of flooded, or maybe
I think it was probably all of those things. But then it was specifically the workshop, which was a psychological workshop. We were learning certain Gestalt techniques. It was in that workshop that I was in a reenactment, and the reenactment then brought up all the stuff that I couldn't make sense of. That's the whole point of reenactments in any kind of therapeutic environment, is to bring up our inner patterns so that we can work with them. But in my case, they were unknown to me.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I find really interesting about the title of your work, the word embodiment, is that, you know, a lot of trauma survivors, they tend to get out of their body, and they tend mm-hmm. to, you know, cut themselves off, or maybe they start gaining weight because they're eating lots of comfort food, or they stop exercising mm-hmm. because they don't want to move. But you kind of involve movement within the process, if I'm understanding it correctly.
Well, in the beginning, the very first group I did, I tried to do a lot more actual yoga postures. And the feedback I got from the people in the group were, this is too much, too fast. And certainly that was back in the 90s, and yoga hadn't exploded on the world. But still, many people who have trauma, like you're saying, have a difficult time being in their body. So then I thought, well, okay, if I can't do an actual yoga posture, how do I scale it down even further? Like, what are the real principles behind this? And that's when I started working with how do you organize the mind so that the person is not scattered and overwhelmed, but can literally start making sense of their world and then make the choices to do things, whether it's to make a movement or to do anything with that. And that seems to be the underlying piece of it. There was a time when I was in my training, my social work training, I was working at McLean, and I was somebody had heard that I had lived at Kripalu and did yoga and meditation and wanted me to teach yoga and meditation to some of the people on the dissociative units. And so I'd go at night and do an evening class with them. And they really helped me see, too, about how difficult it is to turn our attention inward. And what are the steps that help somebody feel safe to explore this chaotic inner world?
Just to kind of put everybody's mind at ease, if somebody feels that they're struggling with a trauma, they know it, or they maybe they feel there's something there, is it possible to actually clear and get rid of trauma so you drop that stress, and you drop that anxiety, you drop that fear, and then move on to a more quote-unquote normal happiness and lifestyle? Can you actually get rid of the trauma?
Absolutely. Okay. But the caveat there is it always takes longer than any of us hope.
And are you meaning in terms of just getting to the root of the issue or just the healing process?
Well, what
process?
We can do is we can, depending on the severity of the trauma and the circumstances around it, it can happen more easily than other situations. But we can reduce the symptoms, which make it easier to live our lives. But to really pull the patterns out by the root, that's where it takes more time. Reducing the symptoms can, in many cases, work pretty easily. And the Becoming Safely Embodied skills are designed just for that, to reduce symptoms. But then once you reduce the symptoms and you have more equilibrium inside, then the question is, how do you start cleaning and clearing what I call the perceptual lens, the way that we look at the world, which is the world isn't safe or people can't be trusted or bad things are going to happen. And clearing those beliefs is really what starts making our world a much more nourishing place to be in.
Would it be accurate to say you're almost kind of reprogramming the brain cell connections?
No, I don't know about the brain cell connections, but we're definitely reprogramming. In the attachment world, we call it remapping our internal world.
Yeah. Oh, I like that, remapping, because, you know, and once you kind of drop the anxiety and fearfulness, of whatever it is, you still have these maybe triggers here and there. And so is that what you're remapping?
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, what would you suggest to somebody? Let's say they're feeling stuck. They're maybe having problems in relationships or, you know, finances or whatever. Maybe they don't know about a traumatic episode. What would be some ways for them to just start moving forward? Is movement a great way of dealing with that?
Slow, gentle movement certainly can be, but for many people that's also really overstimulating. Some people use journaling. One of the best ways is just to begin to see how your behaviors are showing up in the world and track it over time. Like, whenever I'm around this kind of person, I get angry and defensive, or I collapse, or I submit, or I freeze, and those are the kind of real, what we call animal defenses, that where we tighten up and we can't behave in a safe and authentic way. We don't feel fresh in our world and alive. When we start tracking what is involved in all that, we begin to see those patterns and how they're laid down. And that helps build insight. Then what we can do is really learn to externalize or disidentify with these problems. In the internal family systems model, we call it unblending. But all real traditions help us do that. And in meditation, what we want to do is separate out what's disturbing from our true essence, from our true nature. And as we separate them out, we can then be with it and explore it rather than being in it and being overwhelmed by it.
Well, how does meditation go about helping deal with that?
Well, in meditation, what we're doing is we're trying to, first of all, stabilize the mind so that it's calm and focused. And some of the first parts of meditation are always to be able to train our mind to focus on one thing versus all the many, 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 many things that are in our attentional field at any moment. So that practice of training the mind is what we call concentration. And when we can slow down and focus our mind where we want to go, we actually begin to be able to move towards something. So imagine if you're feeling overwhelmed and triggered all the time. Your mind is scattered, and you can't focus on anything. Well, then you can't really move toward anything that you want because you're just lost at sea. So when you train the mind and you focus on one thing versus everything else that's in the field, you begin to say, okay, I want to go here. Like somebody that's really depressed, they need to be able to focus the mind and go for a walk. So how do you actually get out of bed and get moving and move, get your things together and go for a walk? And maybe it's just a slow walk, but then you're walking and you're training the mind to look around and not be caught in the internal storm that's brewing all the time. You're looking at, well, what are the neighbors doing, or what's it like to move one foot in front of the other, or what's it like to see this day outside of us? So that's all in the realm of concentration practices on a very simplistic level. And then there's what we call mindfulness, being able to notice and witness and observe everything that comes up without being caught in it. That, what we need then is to be able to sit with something and observe it happening rather than always feel it happening and acting on those impulses coming up all the time. And we need that skill as well, because whenever the inner turmoil starts brewing, we need to be able to watch and see, oh, just inner turmoil is brewing, and let it move through. Oh, more inner turmoil. Rather than getting lost in it. And then that's when it gets so much more complicated. So those are the real basic skills of meditation can help.
Well, it sounds like basically, you know, when you're stuck, let's say, in depression, and you're, you know, it's hard to get out of bed, and it's hard to get motivated just to even do basic things.
That's
sometimes
right.
Well, it really takes this desire and a commitment to get better on
it takes
on the
enormous desire and commitment. In the Becoming Safely Embodied skills, we look at, well, how do you make that choice over and over and over throughout every day? How do you choose to move towards something versus going down the old familiar path? You know, and we all know it's easier to stay depressed and slumped in our chair than to make these tiny, tiny steps towards something better. I have a client that suffers from tremendous depression. And the other day she told me, well, sometimes she just has to choose, what can I feel grateful for today? What can I, like, just practice a little bit of gratitude to help mobilize a little bit more energy.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's the tiny pieces that we have to do.
Well, let's say you have a family member, a wife, a husband, maybe even a child, who's dealing with some overwhelming emotions. Maybe you don't know what the actual cause is, or maybe they're dealing with depression or something. Is there a way to help them? You know, because when you're depressed, you really don't want to, you don't have a desire to get better, and you don't want to commit. Is there a way for a family member to maybe help, I don't know, motivate somebody?
Well, you know what, it's so hard. I think what's hard about it is that when we see anyone we care about, a family member, or even our clients. I fell into this trap the other day. I really care about my clients, and I have a client that's really depressed. And I kept trying. I had a part of me that kept wanting to help her feel better and problem solve. And she was feeling like, oh, my gosh, I'm never going to be able to talk to Deirdre again because she's not really listening to me. She's not really trying to understand me and how bad it is in me. And I think that, even as a trained professional, we all fall into that, you know, place, and it's very difficult when we really care about somebody and they're our family member and we're with them all the time. The goal, hopefully, for all of us is we're learning, how can I really, really listen to their experience of how bad it is rather than trying to impose my will or my way of being or my thoughts on them.
Yeah.
That's where it really, I think it's easier to go and see a trained professional, even though we still fall into that bind. A good professional, and hopefully my client and I have done some repair around it, is we see that then, oh, look at how I've done this. Once again, somebody didn't understand you. How can I do this better next time? How can I listen and hear from inside of you what the situation is?
Yeah, and it really comes down to listening to the other person, really, and what they want, instead of maybe even fixing.
That's right. It's not about fixing it, especially when somebody's in that much despair.
Well, but the other issue, especially when you're dealing with depression, is a lot of times it's just a lot of distorted thinking. You know, it's just everything's wrong, and everything, because it's like, no, it's actually probably 98% is right, but you're focusing on that 2% that's bad because you've had these maybe traumatic episodes or whatever the issue with the depression or the anger or the stress is. But how can you refocus them, you know, to get between, here's how you're feeling, yes, but the facts are you have all this wonderfulness in your life. There's a way to kind of refocus them.
Well, you just said something that we use in the Becoming Safely Embodied skills all the time, separating out the facts from all the feelings and interpretations. And this is really a very simple mindfulness skill. The facts are X. Like, the fact is right now I'm talking to you. And the fact is you're talking to me. And it's really simple. It's when we then layer on, oh, I'm feeling this about it, I feel good or bad, or I'm worried about it, or something bad's going to happen, all the beliefs, all the interpretations, all the past experience affected, that's when it gets really much messier. So in the Becoming Safely Embodied skills, what we do is practice just paring it down to what are the facts. And staying with those facts till they're they're clear and simple. And what happens then is the body's response neutralizes because we're not adding more fuel to the fire. Then once you have the body in a calmer place, then you can begin to look at some of the ways these places are distorted, the thinking is distorted. In the internal family systems model, what we do is we separate out each of these pieces, all the different parts of ourselves, until we're left with our self energy, and that would be a way that they separate out from that perspective psychologically.
Well, one of the other things you mentioned in your program, a word that really stuck out at me, was highlighted at me, is a word that you say you call belongingness. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could explain that.
Yeah. Wow, it's such a profound word. I didn't really have any idea what that meant until I was in a workshop with the poet David White, and he was talking about belongingness. And I said to him, well, you know, all the people that I work with, they don't belong anywhere. They feel lost and alone. And as I was talking about them, he said, well, what they're doing is they're belonging to the hospital, or they're belonging to their depression. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's right. So then I started exploring, well, how can I help people belong to what they want to belong to versus what sort of are the fallback positions in life? And so we spend a lot of time in the beginning of the Becoming Safely Embodied groups to work with, well, what do you want to belong to? And awakening that memory and that longing in all of us, because we all have that. And we all have positive, life-affirming, life-enhancing things that we belong to. But often we've set them aside or forgotten about them or distrust them or don't believe that they're going to really work anymore.
Well,
and as we awaken them, they come to the fore.
Something you said right there, just maybe, is it possible to be, I don't know, maybe addicted is not the right word, but stuck with these, with the depression or trauma, because it ends up becoming kind of their story, and this is who I am, and who would I be if I'm not depressed, or I'm not feeling anger, I'm not traumatized, you know?
Yeah. Well, it is totally, as you say, it's possible to be stuck there, and that's one of the things that we all, I think, have to rework inside of ourselves. And again, that's the word remapping that the attachment theorists talk about, is how can we reimagine for ourselves the life that we do want to have instead of the life that we're currently caught in? And how do you use your imagination to really open that up? Or how do you reawaken that longing for what is originally there? How do you awaken the pure energy that truly is your own gift to the world that you may have shut down or forgotten, but it's always there?
Where can people find out more information about you and the work that you do?
I have a manual that people can buy. It's on Amazon. So what you can do is look on my website, dfay.com. There, I have a link there for a discounted copy of the manual. I have different training groups that I do, both online and in various workshops around the world, and information on that is also on my website. Currently, I have a group going on called Embodied Practices, which is about using yoga and meditation to help heal trauma symptoms. So there's, you know, they can also find information on that at dfay.com.
And that's the letter D and then FAY.com.
Yes.
Just a D as in Deirdre, and then Deirdre, I'm sorry, and Faye, your last name. And what I wanted to impress upon people is, you know, I've had my issues, if you listen to other episodes of this show, you know, dealing with depression, and Deirdre's had her issues in dealing with trauma stuff. There's no shame in having these feelings come up, and it's certainly amazingly helpful to find a coach. You know, there's not a person in the world who's successful at anything, whether it be, you know, sports or music or CEOs, who they get the training and not just how to hit the ball better or how to do marketing, but that mind training, because really everything in life goes back to an emotional state, a feeling state, and a thinking state, as well as the actions. But it's, if you're not in a good place emotionally or thought-wise, you're not going to find the success in your life.
I love that you pointed that out, Craig. I love that you're so committed to people and to reducing the shame that people have about whatever they're dealing with. I'm so grateful for you for that.
Oh, well, thank you. I think part of my deal was, and maybe it's because I'm a guy or something, but I always felt like I had to do it by myself, or it didn't count, or I don't know. But it wasn't really until I started getting coached and getting help from others, whether it's just reading books or going to workshops or talking with somebody like you and getting that, because it's usually that other pair of eyes or that other pair of ears that will hear something or see something and say, okay, if you just did this, if you just tweaked it like this, then I'll get better.
Yes, beautiful.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I know we only had you for a short amount of time, as you're really busy. So I appreciate your time, and I was just wondering if you could just, you know, end it with maybe something about, you know, I know people are struggling, but maybe if you explain how it's possible to get better, that the help is out there.
Yeah, there definitely is. We all get so discouraged. It's so easy to get discouraged. And one thing I will stress is that there are people out there. There are like-minded individuals like you, Craig. Look at what you're creating. This is where people can get a sense of community and connection and that they're not alone. And then it's about to continue to speak up with love and kindness for ourselves and for other people, because other people won't always understand. But how do we learn to love and appreciate ourselves and then speak up for ourselves with kindness so that other people can learn to understand us? And then we create a link and a bridge for a better world for all of us.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you just, you know, it's not just you learn something once and then you're done. It's continually, as you grow as a person, you're going to want to learn new things and deal with, and things will come up to press your buttons. I remember something that always struck me as amazing is the great opera singer Pavarotti would always spend about 3 or 4 weeks a year working with his vocal coach, which he had been working with for 20 years. And because as he grows older, maybe even as he, you know, changes body shapes, as he maybe loses weight, gains weight, things will change with his voice. And so he's constantly looking to be the best, and so he goes to get help. And so I certainly recommend that you take some time and look at Deirdre's website, which is again dfay.com. And of course, you can find all this on the Mastermind Show page for Deirdre, and all the links to her various websites. And Deirdre, I so appreciate your time, because I know you're so busy, and it's taken us some time to schedule this. So I appreciate your patience and your time and all the work you're doing in the world.
Oh, thank you, Craig. I feel the same toward you.